Good morning, all. I move to convene the meeting of the Washington State Fish and Wildlife for Saturday, December the 14th, 2019. To not be remiss, happy holidays in advance in case I forget near the end of the day. We're going to move quickly into agenda item 12, Columbia River Salmon Fishery Policy Review. This is briefing and public comment. The presentation will be made by the one and only Bill Twight and Ryan Lothrop.
The one and only, both of them?
Yeah. Well, it's sort of a... I'm glad you boys are smiling this morning. Let's rock, you know?
Good morning, Chair Carpenter, Commissioners, Director, and Deputy. We are... Neither the one nor the only, but I am Bill Twight, and with me is Ryan Lothrop, both of us from the Columbia River Management Unit, and we're here at your request to give you an update on the Columbia River Salmon Policy Review process.
Good morning, Chair, Commissioners, Director. So I'm Ryan Lothrop within the Columbia River Management Unit. Some of you may have seen iterations of these presentations on the Joint Commission work group process for the Columbia River policy. So today, we'll be working through the background, starting off with the harvest reform, moving on into policy C 3620, the comprehensive policy review that the staff undertook last year, and then moving on to the Joint State Columbia River Fishery Policy Review Committee, otherwise known as the PRC, and what that process entails, the meetings that occurred, a quick summation of the meetings and what transpired, and future work as well. So the background, focusing on harvest reform, we're starting off with a Kitzhaber plan. Oregon Governor Kitzhaber requested the Oregon Commission to work with the Washington Commission back in 2012 with three main focuses: to further prioritize recreational fisheries, enhance off-channel, otherwise known as select areas, for commercial fisheries with gill nets, and then transition the gill nets out of the main stem into alternative gear, fishing gears for the commercial sector. In 2012, the Joint State Work Group process was undertook and involved key stakeholders, staff, and commissioners, several who are in this room as well. They worked through a set of expectations off the three sets of priorities under the Kitzhaber plan and developed a final work group product. Which then leads us into Policy C 3620, which the Washington Commission adopted in 2013, largely in part based on the work group products back in 2012. The policy has since then been modified in 2017 and as recently as last spring. The three primary objectives are still, in our policy, are orderly fisheries, otherwise known as concurrence, conservation and recovery, and the economic well-being of both the sport and commercial fisheries. Additional provision of the policy was adaptive management, and the reason for this is you don't always know what you're doing. Initially, there are some changes that may occur, unexpected expectations that didn't fully materialize. So it's an avenue to learn by doing and adapt and move forward to still achieve your three primary objectives. And the policy finally was to, as I mentioned in the previous slide, further establish the recreational fishery as a priority in the main stem Columbia River. So in 2018, staff was directed to undertake a five-year policy performance review of Policy C 3620, which was finalized approximately 11 months later. Undertook numerous meetings with the commercial and recreational advisory groups, the public, fish committee meetings, incorporating comments and thoughts into the policy review, what worked and what didn't. We looked at, as I mentioned, 2013 through 2017 and how it performed. The basic message was the conservation objectives were met, and maybe I should speak to that a little more briefly, which I should have done in the previous slide, but the conservation objectives meaning ESA objectives, USV Oregon management agreement objectives, and also with an intent to remove hatchery fish off the spawning grounds. So conservation objectives were met with except, and then there were also some concurrency issues, so some between the two states are some allocations under gear prescribed that don't align between the two states under that we found under this review. And the economic well-being wasn't fully met as well. So a marginal increase for recreational fishing and a loss to the commercial in a large part due to alternative gear not being implemented due to bycatch issues, release mortality rates that weren't didn't meet our expectations moving in. And also the cost to get into some of those gears are just takes a little bit more to invest in the gear as well. So there are several expectations that were challenges that we summed up in this policy review. So, and then I, the second bullet point I kind of didn't miss mention on the basic message I just went over, but the select area production has increased. Geographic scope has not, but a lot of this work has mostly occurred in Oregon waters. And then the changes in allocations, as I mentioned before, we did see an increase, just to state it, we did see an increase in recreational angler trips, but again, it was a marginal increase. So after the policy review, the two states got together on November 1st to review what we learned over the previous 5 years and to discuss where to go next. Decided to form the Joint Commission Work Group, otherwise, as I mentioned, known as PRC, with using with three Washington and three Oregon commissioners. PRC was tasked to develop recommendations for the goal of reaching concurrency and regulations that would be approved by both commissions, not the PRC, and with two focuses. The first was to get concurrent for 2019 in the short term, and then strive for a longer term policy for essentially 2020 and beyond. So this process still had the same three key principles: meet conservation goals, promote the orderly and or concurrent fisheries rules, and maintain and or enhance the economic well-being of both the sport and commercial fisheries. One of the objectives, or one of the baseline, was to look at ex-vessel value for the commercial fisheries and then angler trips for the sport fishery, and compare those compared to the base period, which had been 2010 through 2012. So the PRC commissioners identified some options that staff analyzed and were brought back to meetings thereafter for review, which included the allocation differences between the recreational and commercial fisheries, what commercial gear could be used within the main stem. And also, in the longer term, which I'll circle back to, we're talking about some other options such as upriver, spring Chinook recreational allocations. So walking through the meetings, the first meeting that occurred was January 17th this past year. The primary focus of this meeting was to establish the process for the PRC, setting up the chair, how public comments would or wouldn't be incorporated, were there any, you know, I guess, scheduling the timeline as well for the process to, in order to meet the short-term goals for concurrency and how to incorporate work on the long-term path. And staff and the commissioners came back on February 6th to focus in on some of those initial options, and then back again on February 26th, refinement of those options for review, with the primary focus at this meeting for the reaching concurrency for 2019. So out of the February 26th meeting, there were three options that were provided by staff. Option one was a transition period. Option two was a Washington policy, 2018 Washington policy, and the third option was no economic loss, which were provided a little flexibility to essentially turn the dials a little bit from one fishery type or gear type. So, for example, fall Chinook is a larger fishery, so you could enhance allocation more here and wouldn't have to do as much somewhere else like in summer Chinook fisheries. So provide some flexibility on that. Out of this meeting, option one was approved by a majority vote and sent to both full commissions after that. And sort of jumping into that specific recommendation, which was also approved by this commission on March 2nd. You're probably familiar with this language, but the language is on the slide. It provides a description of what the transition period was with the amendment during the spring Chinook season for 2019. Also included in this, I should reiterate or mention that 2016 was the last year, or last year for moving from gill nets to the alternative gear under the original policy. The other point of this that did change was the barbless hooks. That was changed to voluntary barbless hooks under this recommendation. After that meeting, we had another follow-up March 14th to continue discussion more in the long term. And then there was a brief break through the entire summer until August 1st due to Oregon Commission turnover, needing some time to determine who would be on the PRC. And the August 1st meeting focused in on a presentation similar to this in the background information of Columbia River fishery management, the harvest reform, and what has occurred within the PRC process. And from there, continuing scheduling occurred, and then August 29th was where a lot of progress was made to further refine the long-term potential range of options. And October 1st continued that work to narrow those ranges of options and alternatives down. And then at that point, we had a planned meeting on November 18th, which was has since been canceled and is currently being rescheduled for some time in early 2020. All the materials and assignments that staff had coming out of October 1st have been posted on the websites, both Oregon Washington Commission website, with anticipation that those materials will be reviewed at the next meeting. And the issues that are expected to occur are to continue those discussions on the allocations between the recreational and commercial fisheries. And allowable fishing gear, so the main stem gill net fishing, for example, in zones 4-5 fall Chinook, or summer Chinook fisheries, or spring Chinook fisheries. There are a range of alternatives that include variations to those, and will be presented in a package to the PRC group. Also on the table is barbless hooks, where at this point Washington and Joint State Waters is voluntary to the use of barbless, and Oregon is currently in a barbless hook requirement at this time. So that's an issue that we expect to come up for resolution this early winter. And then also there's ongoing work for commercial license reduction. Washington has hired a consultant to do work and background work on that, and so we are will continue and expect to continue conversations with Oregon and this PRC process on that subject as well. And staff continue work on the development of the alternative gears, as that was one of the hang-ups in the one of the expectations that wasn't met under the original policy. So we are continuing work on that, such as Washington is working on legalizing purse seine, beach seine, and pound net as lawful commercial fishing gear, and among other topics that come up through the PRC process. So with that, that's a brief background of the process. And did I miss anything significant, Bill?
Mr. McKayse.
It's like buying a cow at the auction, I guess, here. Well, I had one question on the presentation, and then if there are other questions from the commission, it would be appropriate to take those. And then I wanted to elaborate a little bit on the future work matter prior to public testimony, so in case there would be some public testimony on that.
Three public comments.
Okay. Well, my question has to do with barbless hooks currently non-concurrent. And your explanation. So the Oregon Commission met last Friday, and they took up a briefing similar to this, where they talked about the delay of the cancellation of the November meeting at their request, and talked a little bit about the future PRC meetings coming up. But they did talk about matching the Washington voluntary barbless hook regulation on a temporary basis pending a PRC discussion about the long term. So technically, in terms of being non-concurrent, what I thought their communique to us was that they were going to match via temporary regulations in Oregon the voluntary barbless hook until such a time as their commission was going to take action on the full package. So is that understanding the proper one from your perspective?
We haven't had any direct communication along those lines from Oregon staff yet, and it may just be a reflection of workload at the moment. So we will reach out to Oregon staff and ask them if that's where they think it's going, and ask them how long they think I'm assuming that would have to be done through the Oregon emergency or temporary rule process. Okay. Yeah. And we'll ask them what they expect that to look like, how long they expect that to roll, and then we can report that back to the commission once we get an answer. But no, we've not had as any follow-up yet from the Oregon Commission meeting any communication along those lines.
Not to say it didn't happen. This could easily just be an issue of, as they say, workload at the moment. We're very focused on, as most of you are probably aware, the first set of forecasts were rolled out just this week. There's a tremendous lift that's involved with that.
Chair Carpenter, Commissioner McKayse, your understanding, I did listen to the Oregon Commission meeting, and I know that there has been some high-level communication between the directors, and I believe that you stated it correctly that Oregon is planning on continuing the regulation on the choice of barbed or barbless hooks through temporary regulation choice. I don't know the timing of that, but I assume that it would remain concurrent so both states have the same regulation so we didn't have a break. I have not yet been able to confirm that, but we do have a statement from Oregon that that's their intent.
Thank you. And Director elaborating on the future process, maybe I would hold him unless they're here until after there's any other questions. But I would like to show that before we go to public testimony. Should I go ahead? Okay. So just to elaborate on the upcoming process, and I do this in the follow-up of our commission discussion in October, where prior to the cancellation of the PRC meeting, we were talking about what the Washington process might be. We were talking then about a one-meeting process or a two-meeting process. And we were talking about east side, west side representation and those kinds of things. So this reflects some email traffic that's a little bit more detailed than what the staff slide was here. And again, in November, as they said in their presentation, at the request of Oregon, the PRC meeting was canceled. And in that request, they said, we'd like the PRC process to continue, and we'd like to see some meetings in the January-February time frame, and hope that the PRC would be able to reach some agreement by the time of their April commission meeting. So this graphic is intended to talk about where we ended up at our last meeting and put forward what our understanding is of the PRC process moving forward, as well as our process moving forward, as well as Oregon's process moving forward prior to public comment. And the intent there is, when we get back after public comment, that hopefully we would have a clear understanding here about what the process is moving forward, and if there are commissioners that would like a different east side, west side combination or two-meeting process, we could have that discussion. So you'll see here for the Joint Interstate Policy Review Committee, this intent to have two or three meetings over the course of January, February, early March. And as the staff indicated over there under the purpose column, that we would take up the November PRC agenda meeting that had been postponed. It's good to hear that all the materials are on the website now, so commissioners can take a look at that. But get the new Oregon commissioners comfortable with the process, and then take up that November agenda and hear about all that analysis. And then any additional meetings would be for the purpose of reviewing the analysis of the alternatives. And as was indicated, there are several alternatives to many issues, and the purpose would to get all of the PRC members comfortable with all of the analysis on those alternatives. We had asked Oregon about one of those meetings of the PRC being on the east, in an east side location. One of the issues that is at hand, it wasn't one of the ones listed here in the staff presentation because there are so many, but one of them was the upriver downriver allocation of the sport fishery share for spring Chinook. And we have talked to the Oregon folks about trying to have a meeting somewhere, maybe in the Tri-Cities area, the state line, Hermiston, or somewhere over there, so that we can hear directly from those folks in that area. You see here, late March, at a date to be determined, all of these dates to be determined. There's a current doodle poll out amongst folks to try to isolate dates. That's an active engagement. And a probable venue of the normal locations of either the Ridgefield, Washington, or Salem, Oregon areas. And the purpose by then, after the prior process, would be for the PRC to strive to reach a recommendation to both full commissions of the Oregon and Washington. If you could scroll up a little bit to a possible Washington commission process. So at our last meeting, there was strong interest in a two-meeting process as opposed to just following the PRC process and having a single consideration. So you'll see here as a possibility our April 10th and 11th meeting is in Olympia. And if that is the first of a two-meeting process, it would consider whatever the PRC recommendation is, provide a public review opportunity, and try to reach a decision of a discussion of reaching a decision and getting whatever the materials are out for public review and not trying to make a decision at that first meeting. We do not have a May meeting. We do have one in June. And so that would be the point of striving to reach a decision on the future policy. So we have here an Olympia and a Yakima meeting sites on our venue. And so with regard to the concern about east side, west side, we've got both here. And hopefully that would address that concern. And if you could scroll up a little bit more, here's the Oregon Commission. This is in italics. Their Oregon Commission hasn't adopted anything here, but they have indicated that if Washington is going to look at a two-meeting process, given the seriousness of the issue, that they would likely do so as well. So they've got a meeting in mid-April, and that might be why that communique back November said they would like to take it up in April. And they do not have a May meeting, just like we don't. They do have a meeting that happens to be right on the same day as one of our meetings in June. And so you'll see the same kind of purpose there, a two-meeting process. To first consider the PRC recommendations, hear some public testimony, move it out for further public comment, and reach a decision at the second meeting. So that's a possible process to move forward. And again, I wanted to put that out there prior to public testimony so that when we come back, maybe we could leave this meeting with some clarity of expectation on how we would move forward.
Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac. Hearing that, we'll now move into the open public comment period. We have three people that have signed up. If anybody else chooses to sign up, they can do it real quickly. I'm going to call the three of you up at a time. All of you have testified previously, so I don't need to tell you the rules. Heath Heikkilä, Kent, and Irene Martin.
Guys want to go or you want me to go? Okay. I guess it's the regulars here with the Martins. Good morning, commissioners, director, happy holidays, Merry Christmas. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. Wanted to follow up on the staff presentation, just kind of provide some thoughts for moving forward. First of all, in terms of the overview, I've said this before, this is nothing new. I don't believe we've met the conservation objectives of this policy. The conservation objectives of this policy were to implement alternative gear to catch surplus hatchery fish, particularly in the lower Columbia, tules, to stave off further reductions in hatchery production. The Mitchell Act buy-up already reduced production significantly, which impacts coastal fisheries, and those cuts will continue if nothing's done to start catching those fish. So there are lots of areas where I don't think we've met the objectives. You have to look at the future of Columbia River salmon. Do we think they're going to get better? Do we think climate change? Do we think steelhead? What's going on that we're really looking at a resource that's improving? I think we've got some real challenges in the Columbia River, which really underscores the need for selective harvest. On the PRC, this board will decide, this commission will decide moving forward what you'd like to do. I'll just say that the first iteration of the PRC was heavily shaped by the commissioners that were appointed to the PRC, and to the point that votes were taken on which alternatives to even consider, which then flavored what you got in terms of recommendations. So moving forward, you need to think about that, because what process is in place for you to be able to consider a full range of alternatives if the PRC is going to narrow down, depending on the composition, and I don't know who Oregon will point to it, make certain recommendations. In terms of the staff presentation, the only thing I'd really point out, there's been a quote that basically we've gone back to 2016 with what the Washington Commission did in March. That's not true. If you look, it's true in terms of the allocations. It is not true in terms of the allowable gear in the main stem. So I'll follow up with you in writing, just kind of pointing to the exact policy. But essentially what you did in March was open the door to main stem gill nets any time of the season, any zone, essentially spring, summer, and fall, and that is not what was in place in 2016 under the reform. So I just want to point that out. I think it's also important to remember where Oregon got, how Oregon got to their rules that they did in March of 17, which were a compromise, I think as many of you know, that put additional off-channel area production in for spring Chinook. It made permanent the zones 4 through 5 gillnet fishery. So there was significant compromise made, and there was economic modeling done at the time, which essentially showed that under the Oregon 2017 rules, you would exceed the economic pre-policy economic baseline, and you would come close to meeting the what I'll call the no policy baseline, as if the policy didn't exist in the first place. So I've brought copies of just the summary of that modeling. I'll hand out to you. I've also provided the link where you can go look at the different alternatives. Just remember, this is from 2017. So what was the Washington position then was a lot different than what the Washington position voted on in Spokane in March was. So I'd focus primarily on some of the Oregon options that are outlined there. In terms of moving forward, we're non-concurrent right now, big time, between the two states. I think that's a problem. So we've written about the need for fixing this. I think it needs to be fixed, frankly, soon, because the legislature is looking at this closely, not only from a policy perspective, but you've got money in there for a buyback, other things. What point is there having a buyback if we're going to reverse and go back to having year-round mainstem gill netting? There's no point in a buyback. So I think it's really important that you guys make a decision soon so the legislature can act accordingly in terms of budget and so forth on the buyback and elsewhere. So thank you for the time.
Thank you, Heath. Mr. and Mrs. Martin, you can choose which one goes first.
Good morning, Commissioners. Instead of saying happy holidays, I will use my usual epithet around the house, which is humbug. I'm a commercial fisherman from Skamakaway, Washington, Kent Martin. On the 13th of November, I attended the first meeting of the Alternative Gear Work Group. I saw some very good minds in the commercial fishery providing problem-solving feedback to some pretty good minds in the WDFW. One item, however, troubled me. One of our fishermen on the panel has been hearing the rumor that clipped steelhead from the Cathlamet trap were being sold. Just idle gossip at this point, but I have all too often seen such wispy clouds make the rounds of the media and fill meeting rooms. The WDFW has usually remained silent, which tends to lend credence to these conspiratorial fantasies and all too often frames a debate on fisheries policy, which it has on this one. The ban gillnets and save the orcas mantra is a total fiction, but it has moved some restaurateurs to refuse to offer local Chinook salmon. Again, the department has largely acquiesced while the recreational fishery has proclaimed gillnets to be an environmental abomination. In truth, the actual numbers of critical stock dead fish, not percentages, have been lower in the commercial fishery than in the sport fishery in many, if not most, cases. Selective harvest is ultimately about dead fish, not percentages. The recent vehement opposition on October 1st by the recreational leadership to a proposal from Commissioner Graybill to pass an additional 500 spring Chinook through to provide some enhanced sport fishing in the Snake I found ominous. The takeaway for our people was that sport leadership, for all the talk of selective harvest reform, is not about to countenance any harvest technology that catches fish and thereby diminishes their potential opportunity for absolute priority everywhere all the time. The commission must defend the science if alternative gear experiments are to be anything more than an academic exercise and a waste of money. Meanwhile, policy 3620, which was rushed through in three months, has languished for 7 years. There is no increased conservation value, and I would argue that there's probably a conservation negative because there's been no recent hook and mortality studies done. Newest is 25 years old. Select areas have not been expanded in terms of geography or production, and the production, 90% of the production increases that have been accomplished were planned pre-12. 2012, and at no time has either state committed to what are harvest goals within the normal fluctuation of population abundances. There's easily $1 million in alternative gear sitting in Lower Columbia warehouses. We have been doing our part. It's time to do yours and give us back our fishery or rethink the entire hatchery system. Thank you.
Thank you, Kent. Irene?
You heard from the Grinch. Now it's my turn. I'm probably not going to come across as much more than that either. I want to kind of ground truth the policy, if you like, here. I've been testifying before this commission for many years about the statistics and the stories of the issues, the negative social statistics in our communities, and the problems that individuals and businesses are having. After approximately 14 years of testimony on this, I see the situation continuing to get worse, and this cannot continue like this. What I'm seeing right now going on is that the business value of these businesses that were of considerable value at the beginning of the park policy in 2012 are gone. Most of these businesses are now unsellable as businesses. There are boats for sale all along the Lower Columbia, and there are no buyers. Incomes are down, in particular because of the lost opportunities for fishing, which affected all seasons, spring, summer, fall, and the select areas as well. At this point, we have no viable buyback program at all. There's not even any discussion going on regarding indemnification for the losses that have occurred over the years of the policy. Part of the problem and the bigger issue, I think, that we all need to think about, both in terms of this policy and any other policy you might develop, is the issue of risk. We knew from the outset that this was a high-risk policy. Even Governor Kitzhaber even stated exactly that, and that the risk was being borne by the commercial fishery. The weight of all that risk has caused this fishery to collapse, and that is the point we are at this point. What I'm looking at is that items that seemed like good ideas at the time went into the policy had no scientific basis, and we're trying to do the science now and in the future, for example, with the alternative gear. But meanwhile, the cost has been very great, and nobody is left with any money to invest in that alternative gear. That's the situation we're in. You can talk to us about a trap. There's nobody on the Lower River has $100,000 to $150,000 to invest in a trap, and that would be cheap. So, please do not underestimate the damage that this policy has done to the people in the Lower Rivers, individuals, families, businesses, and communities. It has affected everybody negatively. It has affected recovery. The Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Plan, which I was part of, and I was on that board for many years, had harvest built in. Harvestable, healthy populations were part of recovery. In my contacts in the recovery business and the recovery agencies, they have all admitted we have fallen behind in recovery, in part due to this policy. There's a lack of trust in the commission and in the department and in the governance. They feel, the people that I talk with and live with daily, my neighbors and my friends, feel that they have been abandoned by their government and by their commission. I know it's time for me to stop, and I will have one more sentence to say, which I would like to support the PRC process. I think it is one of the few things that is happening at this point that offers some opportunity for change in a better direction. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Irene. We do have two more people signed up. I'll call them up. Shannon Moore and Art Tomar or Thomas. I'm not sure of which that is. But I do want to note on here, the public comment is on the Columbia River piece only today. I see on here, Shannon, you want to talk about the Samish again. We won't be able to do, let me finish. We won't be able to do that today. This is on Columbia River only. And Art, you put down here number 13 and 14 of things you're going to talk about.
Yeah, I wanted the open session. I didn't really necessarily want to comment on this open session.
Okay, then we'll come back later then. All right, thank you very much. Shannon?
Yeah, good morning. It's unfortunate that the three minutes wasn't long enough to finish up on some of the habitat issues in Sammamish, so I'll move along here. Once again, my name is Shannon Moore. I've got 48 years in the commercial salmon industry in Washington. Okay, I've been here a long time. And there are permit holders on the Columbia that live here in Bellingham, Washington, and so I'm speaking to that today. The word I'm getting from the fishers from Bellingham, the fish down there, is that the Kitsopper plan is not working, and there needs to be more work there to keep the drifters on the river, to keep the fishery viable for both commercial and sports fishermen. A couple of the comments I got, one was from Mike Wallace. He mentioned that there could be some improvements in the tangle net fishery for the coho fishery on the river that they just had this year. The recommendation there was you need more hours into the light change for better production. Okay. And then the other thing he mentioned is that there's some Columbia River fishermen trying to figure out how to stay viable as watermen. And he mentioned that you need to look at the shad fishery. He said it's an unutilized product that has a good chance to bring more money into that community down there. And Mike's recommendation was you need to look at changing the hours into dark and allowing, basically what he said was allow the same hours that you use for salmon to manage the shad fishery. And I think this is, these guys want to stay working, and they want to stay drifting, and the tangle net fishery looks very promising, although the hours aren't right for the fishery. The other comment that I want to make is that there are 57 dams and diversions in the entire Columbia River system. Okay, that's quite an impediment to moving fish in there. So we need to be looking at more improvements on fish passage, adults going in and juveniles going out. And I'll leave you with this thought, last statement that I have. There was a comment made by a tribal leader that just passed on here a couple years ago, and he said every time somebody turns a light on in Los Angeles, a salmon jumps out of the light switch. Billy Frank Jr.
Thank you, Shannon. Appreciate you coming in. Okay, we are now nearing the end. I'm sorry, Bob. Mr. Kehoe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just so the public is aware, the three commissioners on the PRC are Commissioner Graybill, myself, and Commissioner McIsaac, who serves as the chair of the PRC. I just want to respond to some of the public comment concerning commission engagement in the PRC process. Just wanted to let folks know that the meetings are open public meetings. Materials are posted prior to the meeting, so everything that the PRC folks see is available to the public and other commissioners too, I think more importantly. And so I would encourage my fellow commissioners who have an interest in this moving forward to follow along. I think the meetings are live streamed as well, And so there's ample opportunity for the whole commission to participate in the PRC process. You don't have to just wait until you see what the PRC cooks up. So that's one point. The other point I wanted to make is during the first round of meetings that we had, we did have a lot of folks from the east side, county commissioners, really expressing an interest and desire to have the meetings, at least one meeting on the east side. And as you can see from the schedule that we put up, we have tried to accommodate that. So I think that's important. I think that's an example of hearing from the public and responding to that request. So I just wanted to make those two comments. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner Keel. Commissioner McKenzie.
Chairman, just to follow up on that, in public testimony, we also heard some concern about the elimination of alternatives and that the commission be engaged in the understanding of how the PRC is eliminating some alternatives. At the onset of that process, all the alternatives anybody could possibly think of really were put on the table. And they were discussed. And at any point in time when an alternative was eliminated or deactivated from further analysis, it was described in writing in the meeting summary notes. And there's also the rationale for why an alternative was deactivated from further consideration. So the alternatives that have been deactivated from further consideration, if you want to know them, you can see them. If you want to know what the rationale for the deactivation has been, you can see that. And when we provide the reports from the committee activity, just as happens for the Wolf Committee or the Big Tent Committee or any other committee, that would be a good time for if there are commissioners who have concerns about an alternative being deactivated and want to provide some feedback to the committee, that's why you have committee reports to the full commission. So that opportunity is there.
Yeah. Any other comments from the commission? Commissioner Baker.
Well, I want to first off appreciate the work of the members who are on the PRC every time I hear about it. Driving long distances to spend a day going through this, I'm glad I'm not on it. I'd also like to say that The concern that I have on all of this is not the final decision, which we aren't going to have anytime soon, but the fact that we aren't going to have a final decision anytime soon. Between now and June, we have two very important systems happening. One's north of Falcon and one's the legislature. And right, and thinking about orderly fisheries, at least it doesn't feel to this commissioner that we have exactly orderly fisheries right this second. We thought we would have final decisions by now. We actually planned it to have final decisions by now so that everybody would know where we stand going into the legislature and the North Falcon process. But the Oregon Commission appropriately slowed down their process so that their new commissioners could at least pretend to be up to speed. And the reason I say that is because I've been on this commission almost 3 years now, and fisheries are an amazingly, amazingly difficult process to get in touch with, get a hold of. I think that the testimony we had today, we couldn't have had more perfect testimony to illuminate the two sides that we're working with on this. And I really appreciate Mr. Heikkila and the Martins for coming and talking to us again. One thing Heath said, though, is he said we have to have something soon. And I agree, it would be really good to have something soon. But when we, in March of last year, did something soon, we were severely criticized for not doing the public process, and I think appropriately criticized. We need to hear from all of you, and we need to hear from people that fish on the east side, and we need to hear from people that fish on the west side regarding this important policy and finalizing it. So with all that said, I kind of have a proposal for us. We've gotten a letter from Director Melcher, which asks that, well, he expressed his interest in using the delegated authority of our director and him to work on a temporary policy to achieve hopefully concurrence and certainly conservation just for North Falcon and for the so that we can give the legislature what they're asking for. The word they're using is certainty. This is a very uncertain process. So we need to be able to send them some signals, and we need to be able to send our staff to North of Falcon with some idea of how to work. So I'd like to ask the commission, and if we kind of agree, to ask the director to work with Director Melcher to come to us in advance of January with a synopsis of what our delegation of authority is, whether they need any further delegation of authority to enact orderly fisheries in the meantime while we are working on this policy, and to give us an overview of what he and Director Melcher are talking about so that we can have a short-term plan that meets what we need to do to provide good governance of these fisheries in the spring and in the North Falcon process. So that's my thoughts. I think we need something, and that's the best I can come up with. So does anybody have any objection to doing that?
Obviously, at the will of the commission, but I absolutely am comfortable sitting down with Director Melcher, evaluating what we can do within our respective authorities, and coming back in January and letting you all know that and getting your input, and then using temporary or emergency rules to set up this year. I'm comfortable with that if that's the direction you want to go.
Any objections from the commission? Hearing none. Thank you, Officer Sutra, and public for coming up with comments. We're going to move now to